This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Being a medical organization, the American Medical Association, the American Pediatric Association, has said this unquestionably advances health, particularly for poor kids, particularly kids of color. And to me, it's an equity issue and it's a public health issue.
With such a short time frame for the referendum vote, information was fast and sometimes furious, with several local organizations hosting debates. Here are Drs. Philip Wu and Rick North after their presentations to the East Side Democrats.
Dr. Wu, why is this such a controversial issue?
You know, it's not just a controversy here. It's been a controversy everywhere. And I think for some of us, it's hard to understand what the basis of that controversy is when, from our perspective, the science is extremely clear about the safety and effectiveness of fluoride. So I think in a lot of debates, you know, you will hear issues of regulation and of, you know, choice and things like that. You know, those are not issues of medicine or science or so. They're a political issue. And so I think to a certain extent that may drive some of the controversy.
Leaving the effects of fluoride alone for a second, what about arsenic? We know there's arsenic in these chemicals, and we know that's not good for us.
There's no concern about fluoride somehow aggravating or elevating or making worse any issues around arsenic.
Right. But there's arsenic in the chemicals we're going to put in our water. We'll be ingesting arsenic.
Not as part of fluoride, no.
But as part of the chemicals we're putting in there.
No.
Okay. Last question. Would you recommend formula made with tap water after we put fluoride?
It is considered to be completely okay to give infants formula with tap water.
Okay. Great. Anything else for our...
And the American Academy of Pediatrics supports that, you know, for babies 6 months of age and older.
Some comments from me?
Sir, why is it so controversial? That's what I started with, Dr. Wu. Why is it so controversial?
Because it's our drinking water. This is so elemental to everything that we do in life. We've got to have it every day. And people, rightfully so, get upset when you are putting toxic chemicals into their drinking water.
Is the science confused?
There are some things that are very definite. We know that fluoride lowers thyroid levels, for instance. We know that. We know that the body keeps 50% of all the fluoride intake in its bones. And we know that if you're a chronic kidney patient, you can't excrete that fluoride as well as people that do not have this condition. We know this. There are other things we don't know. For instance, IQ. There is a lot of scientific data out there, both animal tests and human studies, that the higher the fluoride in the water, the lower IQ in kids, okay? Can we say absolutely that fluoridating is lowering IQ in our kids? We're not going to go past the science. I cannot say that absolutely. But we can say there is a lot of data pointing in that direction. And our stance is better safe than sorry. Unless you can say that beyond a reasonable doubt, this is safe, there is no way we should be putting it in our drinking water.
The pro-fluoride movement has thousands and thousands of studies that show it's safe and effective.
That's what they say. It's interesting because York University in the UK looked at all kinds of studies that the ones that they were citing, and in terms of quality, none of them were considered the highest quality, the A level, and very few even at the B level. So these studies were not very good. And the fact is, a randomized controlled trial has never been done on the safety or effectiveness of fluoride. And that is the reason that the FDA has never said that this is an approved drug. And in spite of what you may have heard, absolutely the FDA has the authority to regulate this as a drug. And they have exercised that authority simply by putting that label on your toothpaste. I advise your readers to look at their toothpaste tube tonight if they're using a fluoride toothpaste and read the warning on it if they have any question that this can be toxic.
Who benefits then?
Who benefits? Are you asking me, is there a money, a profit motive here? Well, let me say first, I really believe this. And I don't think I'm being naive. Most people that favor fluoridation are well-intentioned And they really believe that, you know, it's okay and it's a good thing to do. So I'm not going to, you know, question their intentions. Just like people on our side, we think it's a bad thing to do and we don't want to do it. So I think most people across the board are well-intentioned. Okay. Is there a profit for some? Yes, the phosphate fertilizer industry. Okay. Yeah, this is a toxic waste that they are producing. They would have to dispose of it at a hazardous waste facility if they did not sell it to municipalities. So they're making money on both ends. They don't have to pay at one end, and they're making money on the other. Engineering and building firms that we have to put in this facility, we're talking anywhere from $5 to $7 million this will cost. Okay. They're going to make money. Bottled water companies that produce unfluoridated water, they know very well that many, many people, if we fluoridate, are going to have to buy unfluoridated water. So they're going to benefit. So is there a profit motive there? Yes. But again, I really believe most people that are in favor of this are well-intentioned.
That was Dr. Philip Wu for Pro-Fluoride and Dr. Rick North for the No on Fluoride side after their presentations to the East Side Democrats. That group subsequently voted overwhelmingly to oppose the fluoride referendum. You're listening to a KABU Earth Day special on the upcoming fluoride referendum. I'm your host, Joe Meyer. Humans only drink about 1% of the total water they consume, with the rest being used for cooking, cleaning, flushing, and watering the garden. It makes sense, then, to ask, in addition to possible salubrious and detrimental effects on human health, what effects would the fluoridating chemicals have on the health of the environment? Here's an interview with two environmental scientists. We're going to talk about the science of fluoride today. I want you to introduce yourself, please, and then let's first say, you know, when we talk about science, some science seems political, some seems not political. So can you please introduce yourself and say, is first of all, the issue of fluoride in the water political?
I'm Howard Patterson, Master of Environmental Management, and sadly, fluoride has become a highly politicized issue.
My name's Jeff Fryer. I'm a fisheries scientist for the last 20-some-odd years. I have a PhD in fisheries. I'm also the chair of the Columbia Group of the Sierra Club. And I would say that fluoride is both a scientific and political issue. It's the science is certainly important in terms of impacts on the environment as well as health. But it has become almost more of a political issue, I think, in a lot of ways, where the science is not really considered properly.
An earlier guest reminded me that only 1% of fluoride in the water is going to be taken orally, so 99% goes down the drain.
Well, fluoride is a highly toxic compound. For over 150 years, it's had a record of death and damage in animals and humans all over the world. In low concentrations, it appears to have some positive effect on tooth decay. When applied topically, when ingested, the latest evidence of Iowa fluoride study that the National Institute of Health shows no connection particularly between ingestion of fluoride and tooth decay. At low concentrations, there has been debate about its safety. And there was a study done in 2000. York University put together this large study to examine all of the research that existed. And their conclusion was that all of the data was poor at that point. But there is evidence indicating negative health effects. And it's not a surprise that that would be the case, because it is a toxic substance which bioaccumulates. It's stored in the bones and teeth. Now, when I first heard that Portland was planning to fluoridate, it seemed like adding yet another toxin to our watershed, which is already very compromised. We have the largest Superfund site in the country in an area that also has endangered and threatened salmon species. It seemed like it wasn't that good an idea to begin with. And once I looked into what data exists, that in fact turns out to be the case. The studies have shown that very low concentrations of fluoride, we will have a major effect on salmon's ability to migrate. And since the thing they do when they migrate and spawn is such a heroic thing, any impediment to their progress can have a major lethal effect.
Yeah. Let's let Jeff chime in. So let's leave the effects on humans aside. So for the 99 that goes down the drain, what does the science tell us about that?
Well, it ends up in the effluent. That's always been my concern, is what is the impact of that? And if anything, it concentrates it. It's concentrated to some extent in the effluent. The sewage treatment plants do not do anything with things like fluoride or caffeine, all kinds of things we've been hearing about, birth control pills, all that stuff ends up in the environment. And then fluoride, of course, is just one more toxic substance that ends up in the environment. There it's diluted to some extent, but you're still adding some of this into the environment. And in rivers that have higher levels, this could have some impact on salmon. And there's been research on this, not very good. There's a lot more that could be done. It's one of the take-home messages, I think, with fluoride. It's just as Howard mentioned, the research on fluoride has really been rather spotty. There just doesn't seem to be attention to it. One of the best studies was back in the early 1980s when they were doing some radio tagging, putting radio tags in salmon at Bonneville Dam and tracking them as they went upstream, and did this for a couple of years, and all of a sudden realized that the fish were taking a lot longer. They had to go by John Day Dam. They were holding up for days or a week or so even, or more, at the base of John Day Dam. And also a lot of fish were missing between Bonneville and McNairy, up to half of the run, not known where it went. It didn't appear up at McNairy Dam like they expected. So two NOAA researchers did some looking into this and tried to figure out what was going on, and noticed a new aluminum plant opened up just upstream of John Day. And that had just opened up, and they wonder if that could have a relationship to this event. And check the levels of what was coming out, and notice a lot of fluoride was coming out. And they did some checking of other elements, but thought that the fluoride looked like a promising one. And started doing some research on that, and found that that the levels were over 0.5 part per million, and found that in the laboratory they could demonstrate that this caused delays. Just confused the fish. They behaved differently, and they weren't sure where to go, and they were reluctant to enter in water with these higher concentrations.
That was Dr. Jeff Fryer and Master of Environmental Management Howard Patterson. Their takeaway message is that not much is known about the effects of fluoride in the environment, and that the few studies done show that even low levels of fluoride in rivers can confuse salmon and further endanger the species. You're listening to a KBOO Earth Day special on Portland's fluoridation referendum. I'm your host, Joe Meyer. Over the last weekend, I biked around town, stopping at houses with either pro or no fluoride lawn signs. Here are the voices of your neighbors.
Aside from any negative effects of fluoride, are there any benefits of putting fluoride in our water?
The only benefits I can see is to get some people who own fluoride richer.
Okay. And what about the negative effects?
From what I understand, there's neurological effects, and the fact that they're just putting chemicals in water that's otherwise just water, and as far as I'm understanding, that's good enough.
What would you say your source of information is on fluoride?
People around me. Talking to people. I haven't personally been to any of the events and what all, but my girlfriend has, and so I hear a lot from her.
I've looked at the studies. I think that the negative effects of fluoride on fish populations and water quality are minimal. I think the primary issue with fluoride additives are an equity question around low-income, particularly low-income young people who may not have the resources to be able to get the tablets, may not take the tablets if they're given them at school, may not take them over the summer. Their parents may not be able to give them the kind of dental care they need. I think given the long track record of fluoride in every major city in the country, I think I can live with the uncertainties of the potential environmental issues around fluoride in the larger ecosystem.
I'm confused as to why both sides seem to have convincing evidence. It's not convincing me, because I feel that I know that there are problems with fluoride and I don't want it. But I do find it confusing that the other side points to studies, the proponents of this point to studies that say there is benefit, but I don't think anybody's lying. I think Portlanders are good people, but why are they saying that it's good for us? And I wish they weren't, that this weren't being shoved down our throats, literally, and that it had not been done without public process.
Yeah.
That made me so angry when it happened.
Besides any positive effects, are you aware of any negative effects of putting fluoride in our water?
My understanding is there are people who feel like there could be long-term health consequences or long-term consequences for what happens to the earth, to the land. And, you know, in what I understand about it, looking at sort of both sides of it, I don't think that the research generally comes out in favor of the nose. I think that the risks are small.
And what's on the positive side? What can we hope to
gain?
What's
on the positive side from my point of view? I'm a board member of the Native American Youth and Family Center, and I know that it will help people, not just Native Americans or other people, but people who don't have access to good dental coverage, to have better health and hygiene with regard to their teeth.
Right.
And I believe as a taxpayer that it's going to really reduce costs, that it's fair.
Any environmental impacts you're worried about?
I'm not.
You're not. Okay. What motivated you to take the extra step of putting out the old lawn sign?
My belief that people of all socioeconomic levels have a right to good dental care and healthy teeth.
Are there any positive effects of putting fluoride in our water?
I have heard of no positive effects other than making some fluoride manufacturers very wealthy.
Okay, and what about on the downside? What are some negative effects?
The downsides are most significantly the health impacts upon certain individuals, specifically babies and the elderly and individuals with kidney conditions. Fluoride taken internally has been proven to be dangerous to those kinds of people.
Where would you say your main source of information is?
Some of it has been the research done by, I believe it's the National Academy of Sciences, who has come out against this. And my understanding is that there has been no research done that has proven that there are health benefits to fluoride, and that there has been research indicating that fluoride taken topically is beneficial, but not internally.
I see. What motivates you in this case to take the extra step of putting out a lawn sign?
Because I, as a citizen of Portland, do not want this in my water, and I want my neighbors to know that this is an important issue. I'm concerned that because it is a spring election, there may not be great voter turnout, and I want this issue to be on everyone's radar.
So what kind of benefits can we hope to see if we put fluoride in our water?
Fluoride has been proven to be safe and effective and cost-effective through more than a half a century of use by most of the country.
Yeah.
It's been shown to reduce the incidence of cavities, dental decay. Mostly helps poor children, helps the elderly, people who don't have the benefit of the ability to do good oral hygiene, of the ability to spend money on dental care. It's just a bottom-line defense that's safe, effective, and cheap.
Right.
And it's kind of a no-brainer.
Is there anything on the other side, or are there any risks?
No.
Where would you say you have your information from?
Well, I'm a dentist, and so I've studied this in school.
The show's going to air on Earth Day. Does this tie into Earth Day or environment at all?
Well, it's safe for the environment. It's a public health measure that is fairly innocuous, I think we could say, to the environment.
What do you think is wrong with putting fluoride in our water?
The role of government in a democracy is not to medicate us against our will. Fluoride is used to slow down the thyroid. It's a medicine used in hyperthyroid, and they're going to dose it in an uncontrollable amount to all the animals and children and people.
Are there any possible benefits of putting fluoride in our water?
They're not. You know, the reason it says do not swallow on the Colgate toothpaste is because fluoride is damaging. It's, if you want to put help your teeth, just put a little bit of fluoride on the tooth and then spit it out. But you don't swallow it. That's why there's a warning on all the Colgate and other toothpaste out there that contain fluoride.
Any special significance to this issue on Earth Day?
Yes. I mean, we're poisoning the Earth with this synthetic substance that comes as a waste product from a corporation that's going to, as opposed to spending a lot of money having to dispose of it, they're going to sell it to the people of Portland.
Any advice to fellow listeners who may be on the fence still?
If you want to use fluoride, just, you know, take the pills and think about the people that don't want fluoride and that have a thyroid that doesn't need fluoride, and children that, you know, don't have a lot of nutrition. They really suffer when they're forced to be medicated with this synthetic toxic substance.
Well, so what can we hope to benefit by putting fluoride in our water?
Better teeth for people who are possibly in a different socioeconomic situation than I am.
Any possible harm?
I do worry about what it will do to the waterways and the salmon. But I don't know anything about it, so I can't make any sort of educated comment about that.
Yeah. Oh, as we head to the polls, what advice would you give your fellow citizens?
I think there's a huge difference in the socioeconomic levels of many of the people who are really opposed to this to maybe others who are more apathetic. And I think it would benefit many of the people who are more apathetic than those of us who are opposed. That's maybe cryptic.
But we'll try to decode that one back at the lab. And then the last question is called, this show's going to air on Earth Day. Any special significance to this issue for Earth Day?
I guess if we're considering the salmon population and the waterways, of course. But I know that Portland's not the only municipality that's trying to do this. So, I mean, it's been done other places, and I think there must be a body of research somewhere that would tell us.
Those were voices of Portlanders with pro and no fluoride lawn signs. From Randy Leonard's framing to neighbors with lawn signs, we heard a lot of well-off white talk about other socioeconomic groups and helping communities of color. For the final segment of this KBOO Earth Day special, I spoke with Clifford Walker of the NAACP.
And when Dr. White came to Portland, I listened to what she had to say. And I also listened to the proponents for fluoridation. And based on my understanding of the issues, I believed, and obviously the other members of the NAACP believed, that adding fluoridation was a risky thing to do, especially if we wanted to consider people suffering with diabetes, which adversely and disproportionately affects people of color, especially Hispanic people and black people. It was put to a Democratic vote, and the NAACP supported the position not to fluoridate the city's water.
Well, so it sounds like you heard from both sides.
Yes, we talked about it. You know, we had questions. But basically, it was left to the NAACP. I think that those of you who are interested in the discussion, you know, don't be propagandized by one side or the other. Do your own research.
Do you trust your doctor?
Well, okay. I'm a veteran, and I'm the chair of the Veterans Committee on the NAACP. And if you ask me if I trust the U.S. government on all of its recommendations and claims, I'm skeptical about some of them. For example, veterans had a hard time making their claim that Agent Orange, I'm a Vietnam-era veteran, and a lot of veterans who went to Vietnam got involved with a chemical defoliant called Agent Orange. And because of their handling of the product and exposure to the product, they came down with a lot of serious diseases. And they made claims to the government that they felt that their health problems were directly associated with their exposure to Agent Orange. And the government pretty much denied that there was any causation for about 30 years. So do I trust them? You know, that's a question. I think they're coming around now saying, yes, Agent Orange was toxic and there were a lot of medical issues associated with exposure to Agent Orange. But, you know, that's 30 years later before they even admitted to the damage. And a lot of veterans who were exposed to it died before they got any medical help or assistance or recognition from the government that there was a causation. So, you know, when you ask me that question, you know, they denied it for so long, and now they're recognizing there was a causation, but the veterans had to make their claim. The question is adding chemicals to the environment. Nobody knows what the long-term effect of it's going to be. And we're saying, you know, be safe. It's better to be safe than to be sorry.
That was Clifford Walker of the NAACP. His group endorses the no fluoride side, and Mr. Walker encourages everyone to get informed. I'm your host, Joe Meyer, and I encourage you to get out and talk with your neighbors, especially those in other socioeconomic groups. Almost everyone I spoke to was happy to share their opinion, and I was only attacked by half of a dog. Thanks for listening.
It's Earth Day, and we will hear programs about environmental issues until 7 p.m. when we will hear all nature sounds until 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. Coming up next at 1, Joe Clement hosts an excerpt from the series Against the Grain, in which C.S. Soon interviews Stephen Vogel, author of Against Nature, The Concept of Nature in Critical Theory. At 1:45, Jim Tardy looks at Portland's celebration of World Environment Day coming up June 5th and the 6 weeks between Earth Day and World Environment Day. At 2, Paul Rowland interviews John Stober, longtime activist, investigative reporter, and author. They discuss Stober's beginnings and history as an activist, from protesting the Vietnam War and organizing a teach-in at his high school on the first Earth Day in 1970. You are tuned to KBOO in Portland, K220HR Hood River, and K264AA Corvallis.
KBOO Community Radio continues the broadcast of the 2013 Ilhi Lecture Series on Wednesday, April 24th, when we'll broadcast a talk by Catherine Austin Fitz.
Managing member of Solari Investment Advisory Services, Catherine Austin Fitz is also a publisher of the Solari Report. She served as Assistant Secretary of Housing, Federal Housing Commissioner in the first Bush administration, and Managing Director of Wall Street firm Dillon Reed & Co., Inc. Fitz has designed and closed over 25 billion transactions and investments to date and has led portfolio investment strategy for $300 billion of financial assets and liabilities.
Catherine Austin Fitz will be speaking at the First Congregational Church in Portland, and KBOO will broadcast the talk live at 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 24th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/ilhi2013.
As part of KBOO's Earth Day Public Affairs Extravaganza, we now bring you an extended excerpt from an episode of the KPFA program, Against the Grain, a program about politics, society, and ideas. C.S. Soong talks with Stephen Vogel about how to make sense of the widely expressed feeling that us humans are alienated from nature. It's Dr. Vogel's contention that we are not really alienated from nature as such, and that thinking of the feeling of alienation that way obscures the real issue, which is social alienation. Dr. Vogel is the author of Against Nature, The Concept of Nature in Critical Theory, and a contributor to a recently published volume, Ethical Adaptations to Climate Change, Human Virtues of the Future.
From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California, this is Against the Grain on listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. My name is C.S. Soong. How we humans perceive our relationship to the world around us is obviously of critical importance. Our understanding of and attitude toward other living things and the planet as a whole informs and influences the way we conduct ourselves, determines in large part whether we act to protect the environment or whether we facilitate or allow the degradation of the natural world. So when we hear the claim that we humans are alienated from nature and that overcoming such alienation is all important, many of us nod our heads in agreement. But what if that statement, that claim, doesn't in fact make sense? What if the problem isn't our alienation from nature, but something else? And if some other kind of alienation is at play, what's the best way to address it, to overcome it, so we can act with greater attention to the things that really matter? Stephen Vogel has pondered the meaning of these questions. He's a philosophy professor at Denison University in Ohio and the author of Against Nature, The Concept of Nature and Critical Theory. He also contributed a chapter about alienation and the commons to the new volume, Ethical Adaptation to Climate Change, Human Virtues of the Future. When Steve Vogel joined me from the studios of WDUB in Granville, Ohio, we began by discussing the standard claim that we are alienated from nature. I asked Steve to lay out the basic outlines of that claim.
Well, I think it's a pretty familiar claim, actually, certainly among environmentalists or progressive environmentalists. And it's this idea that somehow we've lost the kind of connection to nature that we used to have, that humans are part of nature but don't recognize that they're part of nature anymore, that they've now tried to dominate nature or replace nature by, you know, building new technologies or sort of transforming the world into a human world, and that this has somehow broken a kind of connection to nature that we used to have, that we should have, that we now we lack, and so forth.
And it's almost like if we can only overcome that alienation, then we can be more in tune with nature. We can act more appropriately in relation to nature.
Exactly. To find a way to be in harmony with nature, to live in accordance with, you know, what nature requires or something like that, instead of trying to impose our will on nature, which, again, part of this line of argument usually is that when we try to impose our will, it usually fails, you know, and there are dangers associated with it and catastrophes or things like climate change or other kinds of really bad developments, so that, you know, you can't fool Mother Nature, people say, and we really have to live in